Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Planet Protectors podcast. We are on season three. Can you believe it? Three seasons of the podcast. And this season, all of our episodes are going to have a theme of green technology. So all the episodes are going to be about technology helping our planet in some way, shape, or form. Now, let's go on to today's special guest of the episode. Our guest is a co-founder and president of the award-winning paint and coatings company Reactive Services, where she also serves as a legal counsel. Her legal practice is focused on contracts, business, administration, innovation, and entrepreneurship. As a serial entrepreneur, she has guided this cutting-edge innovation company operating in the paint and coatings and specialty chemicals industry for the past 15 years. She has served in leadership roles for numerous organizations, including serving as a Pathways to Peace Fellow, which is a premier social justice organization. Her work in the area of human rights and social justice brings a level of experience and intention to ensuring that any climate solution has its heart at environmental justice and enhancement of human rights and personal livelihood. Please give a warm welcome to this episode's special guest, Beth McDaniel. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Blake.
So I want to talk about your company, your organization. So how did you come up with the idea of Reactive Services in direct air carbon capture paint?
Yeah. Okay. That might be a bigger story than you originally thought. Okay. Because I have to give some background on it. We've been in business for 20 years and it's not actually my innovation. I'm married to the innovator. Okay. I happen to marry a brilliant biochemist that came up with the idea of originally putting functional paints and coating, functionalization into paints and coatings and using bio-based materials to achieve that functionality. Because what he wanted to do is achieve a natural and non-toxic functionality on surfaces, as opposed to, you know, you can get certain like antimicrobial paints and stuff like that, that you could put on a surface, but they might have to leach in order to be effective or have, dangerous toxic chemicals in them or heavy metals or something like that. And so his notion was, let's take biomolecules, which are in our natural environment all around us. You know, there's billions of them swimming around on you right now, but they have certain functionalities. Let's grab that functionality from nature, put it into a coating system, meaning a paint or a coating, and ask it to do in that coating what it does in nature. So if it's an antimicrobial peptide, then we want to make that surface antimicrobial, and we have that technology. Okay. So for about 20 years, we've been doing that, grabbing functionality from nature and putting it into paints and coatings. And we're an innovation shop. We're not a manufacturer. Okay. So we work with the manufacturers to develop certain paints and coatings for them. So my husband and I have this company. We have a lot of scientists and such and working in labs and everything. And in 2018, we were struck. We were actually struck after we read a report by the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change in October of 2018. And it just, I don't know, sometimes maybe this happens to you, just read something or you hear something and you're changed forever by it. And we just were, okay? We read that report. We realized how dire the situation was, how urgent, how much it was on our plates to do something. And he's a problem solver. He's a solution finder. And that's what he does. And he said, I've been thinking about something for a long time and I want to talk to our team about it. And that is, I'd like to develop a coding system that I can put something that will capture CO2 from the ambient air. And that something would be algae, okay? In this case, not a biomolecule, meaning not just a part. This would be a living organism, not just a part of a molecule. And so it was a little different, you know, but also in kind of in our lane. And so at that moment, really, I mean, it was really like a week after we read it, we had a meeting with our whole team and we talked to them about the urgency of climate change and that we have certain expertise and tools at our hands and we've got to make them work for the benefit of everyone if we can do this thing. And so anyway, we decided to develop a coating system that had algae that pulled down CO2 from the ambient air.
Awesome. Yeah, that's amazing. I think, like, as you said, we've all read an article that you know, has changed our view on certain things. And that's, I've definitely done that. And that's one of the reasons that I started this podcast. So yeah, I think a lot of people listening can definitely relate to that as well. So you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but how does the paint absorb the carbon dioxide?
We are, okay, that's one embodiment that we have. Okay, we're always developing things. And so one way to pull down the CO2 is in a coating system, and we've developed this. And what it is we actually put algae into the coating. And then this is not a coating that you would necessarily put on your wall, okay? Like, we develop different coatings for different purposes all the time. And this would be because of the breadth of the problem and the depth of it, and just enormous. One problem that we have in developing climate change solutions that are big enough to really tackle the problem is there's not enough space, literally, like on Earth, okay? I mean, your listeners might know this, but there used to be there was a report that came out in an organization, and you know, it's a good idea. It's a trillion trees, and that's what they wanted to do, is plant a trillion trees. Unfortunately, though, that solution would require a size of land of about the size of the domestic United States. Okay. So it's just the amount of people and everything that it would displace would just make it not workable. So that's what we're talking about. And that's one of the reasons why paint and coatings are a good solution, because we don't have to use lateral space, but rather paints are lightweight and they adhere well to surfaces, right? And so we can go vertical. And so what we've developed is these modules to put substrates that have either a coating like I'm describing, or in a new embodiment that we've also developed just a surface treatment on a particular substrate, but piled up into a module. Imagine as much of that surface area as possible doing the work of carbon capture. And what's happening is, you know, in nature, algae, that's what they do. Okay. That's their job, is to capture carbon dioxide with the help of sunlight and water. And they convert that to glucose to feed the plant and release oxygen. Okay. So what we want it to do is just capture it. But what we don't want it to do is then die off and re-release the CO2. So you have to sequester that CO2 also. And you have, meaning that you can't let it re-emit for at least a certain period of time. Some say 100 years, or let's say at least 100 years. We want to know that that's not going to re-emit. And that's another problem with just trees, is unfortunately they die and they re-emit. And that's the way nature works. You know, it's a beautiful cycle, except we're trying to cut it off at some point. So we have a method of, first of all, measuring in these modules that contain a whole bunch of this coated surface area. We have a way of monitoring it. We're monitoring it constantly. Imagine a 1 meter cube module. Okay, so 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, and just a whole bunch of coated surface area hanging in it. And then we know how we're monitoring that. It's like a terrarium, okay? And so we're monitoring it. We know how much CO2 is in it, how much oxygen, what's the temperature, what's the humidity, all of those factors that go into growing it as best as we can. And we grow as much algal biomass on that surface. And then we've determined what the best time it is to actually harvest that. And within that module, we can harvest that algal biomass, and it hasn't released anything yet. And then we put it through a drying phase. And then we do what's called biochar, which you might have heard of before. That's one method of permanent sequestration, like I was talking about. And so that's the end of its life, is it's biocharred. And biochar is a cool thing too, because biochar is like, what it is like charcoal. Okay, you get this like granular kind of charcoal stuff, and it doesn't re-emit. But it's also absorbent. It absorbs humidity from the atmosphere. So it's like a really good soil amendment. So if you take that biochar, which is the end of life of that CO2, you can even put that to work for us, putting it on soils and making those better carbon sinks also. So it's real. It's kind of a beautiful cycle, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things intertwined there. And like the fact that, your company has been able to create that is just incredible and so good for our environment. So that's just really great. Does the algae just temporarily store the carbon and then you sequester it later?
It's sequestered in the form of biochar. So biochar is created through a process called pyrolysis. And pyrolysis is burning without oxygen. And don't ask me anything more than that because I'm not a scientist. Okay. I can't really tell you exactly how that works. The end result is this charcoal kind of stuff. I've seen it live and we've biocharred algae before.
Perfect. Yeah. That just sounds really cool. So does the algae have a capacity for how much carbon it can store?
That's a good question. It would be a better question for my biochemist husband, but I'll tell you as best as I can. And okay. So what algae does is it just keeps on growing until it might overgrow itself. And this is kind of a good opportunity to explain why our system is like lichen. Lichen, as you know, when you go hiking in the forest or whatever, is just like brightly colored. And it's real, like if you see it on a rock, you can't even get it off the rock, right? I mean, if you think about it, it's a lot like paint. And that was the idea that my husband had. He actually had it years ago when he was doing a scientific exploration in the Arctic and saw this big red, what he thought was paint. He thought it was a GPS marker in the middle of the Arctic because everything was real gray. And then he saw this bright red thing and he was like, oh, I wonder what that GPS thing is. And he goes over and it's lichen. And he's like, wow, this grows right in the middle of nowhere, you know, it's so cold and everything. And so that was when he decided, you know, he started studying lichen and the way they work. And that's how we ended up designing these systems, these surface systems and coating systems. And so what they lichen is two different organisms. It's an algae. And the algae does what algae do, like I'm saying, you know, like pulling down the CO2. And then the fungus, what is the other part of it? And the fungus, it like holds the algae. Like if you look at it, a cross section of it, you would see like these little algae cells. And then the fungus are like kind of polymer looking things, you know, with threads. And they're holding the algae in place. And they kind of keep it from overgrowing, which was kind of what I was getting to with the answer that of the question that you asked is, you know, you kind of want it to grow, but you don't want it to overgrow because then it gets toxic. And then there's all these problems with algae too. And so you want to catch it at the right point and then harvest it and secure that CO2 forever in that, you know, biochar or however you're going to ultimately sequester it. But anyway, back to the lichen. So the fungus, it's really cool. The fungus has these like thread-like things that hold the algae, and it allows like the gas exchange that the algae need to operate. It allows sunlight, but not too much UV. It really like takes care of these little algae cells and lets them do. And some lichen, as you know, they're very successful. You know, some of those ones that you see are like 1,000 years old. Wow. And they can be, you know, hundreds to 1,000 years old. And the color is determined by the kind of algae that's growing in it. But basically they just the fungus takes care of the algae. Well, think of the fungus as a coating system or as a surface that we use. And we do things with coating systems all the time in our business. So we can do things like allow sunlight, but not too much UV. We have things that we put into coatings that do that or spread more light, refract light. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do to try to amp up the photosynthetic process as well. So anyway, that's the way our system is set up as well.
Yeah, awesome. So you're using all these like natural like carbon absorbers, which I think is amazing. So with a big project like this, there's got to be some challenges involved as well. Do you know any like big challenges that the project has faced?
Oh, yeah. How long do you have? Yeah, so it's always challenging to innovate. And we've been in this business for a long time. And I always tell my husband, you know, pioneers get arrows in the back, unfortunately. And so that happens a lot where people just don't adopt new innovation. Okay. And you don't want to get me on my soapbox about that because I'll go on and on. But it is true. People are kind of scared of new things. And so it's easier to say no, even if they can you know, do something, find something that works better. And so that's always an obstacle that has to be overcome in our world. And, you know, having enough money and stuff like that. What this technology is a carbon removal solution. That's what they call it, carbon dioxide removal. In that space, it's not a real well-defined space because it's kind of new and all this stuff. And there's a lot of greenwashing. You've probably heard that term thrown around, you know, especially with corporations that are, you know, saying we're doing all this stuff, or oil companies that are, you know, capturing CO2, and they are. They have good methods for capturing CO2, but for a long time, this is nothing new. CO2 has also been used by oil companies to push out more oil. And so a lot of, which is a more sustainable way of pushing out oil, but a lot of people don't realize that that's what they're doing with their captured carbon. They're not putting it to sleep like we are. We're not putting it to death. They're using it and then pumping out more oil. And so the end result is a net carbon positive rather than a net carbon negative. And hey, it's more sustainable than maybe than the way they were drilling before, but you know, we just have to watch what we're putting out there now, because we have a way, way big problem. And we're hoping that this solution can be used like by people like you, you know, in your backyard. I have 20 of these modules in my backyard right now. And so we want this to be a solution that, you know, people can get involved with on their own, kind of like you could have solar panels on your house too, or drive an electric car. We're hoping that this can be kind of an accessible solution to people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of leads me into what we're going to talk about next is, like, how is this, or is this being applied in society or like people's everyday lives?
Not yet. Unfortunately, okay, because we're at the point where we need real serious funding to move on and to expand. We are, so it hasn't been commercialized yet. Now, I don't think that that will be long, okay? I think we're very close to getting to the point that we will be commercializing this. And the reason I'm saying that is because we've achieved certain milestones in the development of the technology, third-party analyses and things like that. You have to, when you're developing a carbon removal technology, you have to have what's called a life cycle analysis, for instance. So the main thing about your technology is you can't be emitting more CO2 in the process than you're pulling down, right? Because that would not make sense. And unfortunately, that's part of the greenwashing that I was mentioning before, is some of these processes, you know, they hadn't been doing all the carbon accounting. So you have to go back to the raw materials and account for everything that, all the carbon that went into that, and make sure that the whole process is what they call net negative. And so we've had those analyses done on two of our different carbon removal embodiments. Okay. And so they are, number one, net negative, and number two, commercially viable in their cost, because they come together with a cost for that. And so as it's compared with others, it's commercially viable. It's definitely competitive. So that's why I say, yeah, it's not out there yet, but you know, go to Walmart in a year and I'm really hoping that you'll find them there, or Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would just be awesome. And whenever that happens, I will sure to get some for my backyard as well.
Fantastic.
So where do you see the company in 5 years or like in the future? I mean, you kind of already mentioned that a little bit with like seeing it publicized in stores like Walmart and Amazon, but is there any other big things that you would see in the future?
Yeah. So just focusing on this technology, we have different platforms of technology. Some of them I mentioned before, like antimicrobial, but if we're just focusing on the climate change solution technology, in 5 years, I intend for us to be, I intend for us to be a winner in the XPRIZE carbon removal contest, of which we are a competitor. I intend for this to be, have been commercialized. Let's say that it's been socialized, commercialized, democratized around the world. I want it to be all those things. I want it to be used in industry to have to help industrial emitters capture their CO2. We can do that because we can run that CO2 straight through our modules, and algae love that. Algae love CO2, you know, it just causes our system to work harder. We can work with the industrial sector, and that's what we're looking at a lot. We can set a, you know, I hope this will be in green zones all over the world. You know, a lot of countries are doing more in that way, you know, developing these green zones. And so they're looking for kind of guidance from the United States about new technology and implementing it, you know. So I'm hoping that we're going to be all over the world and people can, you know, really make a difference.
Yeah, I just think that would be amazing. And I think that the environment would really benefit from that. So all the work that you're doing is just truly amazing. So just thank you for doing that. So you mentioned the X Prize in that spiel. What, do you mind explaining to the listeners what that is exactly?
Not at all. It's really exciting. So there are a lot of different X Prizes, and the X Prize is a global competition to drive innovation in a certain space, okay, for a certain need, like a global existential kind of need, you know, food scarcity or water cleanliness or something like that, something really important all over the world. But there are always innovation contests that I know of. And so there was a carbon removal X Prize that was sponsored in 2021, I guess is when they started it. Elon Musk sponsored it, and it's the biggest prize purse ever given away. It's $100 million prize purse.
Wow.
I know. And so we had been developing the coatings technology for a few years by then. And so we entered the contest. And so the way to win, it's a 5-year contest, or let's see, I guess it was a 4-year contest. I think it started in 2021, and they'll announce the winner on Earth Day 2025. But they, what you have to prove in order to win is you have to actually capture and sequester 1,000 tons of CO2 in whatever, you know, embodiment that you're doing it, and prove it up. And then you have to model costs of that at the million ton level. And the third thing is that you have to have a viable way of getting to the gigaton level, which is the billion ton level. And because really any technology that can't get to a billion tons is not really gonna help very much. Unfortunately, we're in the billion ton emergency phase. we got a billion problems, okay? Lots more than that. And so, yeah, it has to be able to scale up.
And is your technology able to do that?
We've made the argument for it. Yeah. We have different embodiments, but yes, that's what we argue that.
Awesome. Well, that's amazing. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners will want to be able to follow some of your work as well. So is there any, like a website or anything that they can look at to keep updated?
Yeah. So our website for our company is reactivesurfaces.com. So that's not services with a V, it's surfaces like the surface of your table. And if you go to the technology page, you'll see the different technologies that lands on the climate change technology. And you can follow the X Prize. We're Team Lichen, LICHEN.
Awesome. Well, I'll be sure to put some of those links in the show notes for this episode as well. Well, that's the end of the interview. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I'm sure that the listeners will have appreciated all the amazing things you've had to say.
All right. Thank you so much, Blake. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
No problem.
Thank you so much, Beth, for joining me. And thank you for listening, because without you listeners, this podcast would not be possible. If you know anyone that would be interested on coming on the Planet Protectors podcast, please reach out to planetprotectorschallenges@gmail.com or DM our Instagram @planetprotectors_CA. We'll see you next time, and remember to stay eco. Bye for now.